Let's sing and swing.
Evening visit with Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt.
2 o'clock on Thursday afternoon in Manila.
And now we bring you Forbidden Diary, the true World War II story of Natalie Crowther, based on her secret journal written from a Japanese prison camp in the Philippines. Episode 14, Going Bananas. Previously on Forbidden Diary.
What's wrong?
One of the woodsmen escaped over the hill.
Who?
It was Sai.
When?
During work duty. We thought he was just overwhelmed with all the rich food like everyone else.
Well, it's probably more than that. Looks like he might have dysentery. Let's see what the test results show. In the meantime, I want him to stay here for observation. I don't want him to get any more run down or expose others.
Oh, my poor Beatty.
And now, Episode 14.
January 1st, 1943. I dreamed of being dressed in blue satin, a black velvet picture hat, and white furs, but woke doubled into a ball with the cold. The new year is here, and we hope again, as we hoped all of 1942, but we're still concentrated, our teeth crumbling, bodies vitamin deficient, still lacking toilet paper, and using septic tanks for 517, which were intended for 250. But Beatty is back to health, and this morning brought coffee to the window as his daddy whipped up hotcakes from ground parched rice, rice flour, mashed banana, and yams. A triumph of ingenuity to start the new year.
Are there any more pancakes, Daddy?
That's it, kiddo.
Want to play checkers, June?
I guess so. Is it okay, Mom?
Oh, go ahead. Daddy and I'll clean up.
Oh, I get to go first.
No, you don't, you little creep. You went first last time.
Well, Happy New Year, darling.
Happy New Year, Jerry. Is this the kitchen's coffee?
Yep.
First ground.
Uh-huh. They made it for New Year's. Tomorrow it'll be submarined, so drink up.
What exactly is submarined coffee?
Coffee made from used grounds. Alex has the cooks save 30% of the first brew, so 20% can go into the second days and 10% into the third. After that, you can't make much of a silk purse out of it.
Or a decent cup of coffee. Is the kitchen still going to make fresh coffee every 3 days?
Yeah, looks like it.
Well, I guess it's better than nothing. That'll come soon enough, I suppose. Oh, hi, Peg. Come have some coffee with us.
Thanks. Don't mind if I do. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Any word from Davao about your husband?
No. The kids miss him something awful. You know, Jerry, we were separated when the war broke out.
Must be really rough, Peg.
It is. Sometimes.
Did the guards get their pumpkin pie?
Oh, yes, indeed. They hovered over us the whole time we were making it last night. It was actually pretty funny. They inspected every ingredient and sniffed every box of spice.
Nanda, kore? What is it?
Wakara, I don't know.
Oretachi ni nanika amai mon tsukutte kureta no kana? They say making something sweet for us?
Makim Fujin iwaku, kabocha de dekita pie da to. Miss Makim says it's a pie made out of squash.
Pumpkin pie tte iu no. Tottemo oishii no yo.
It's called a pumpkin pie, and it's very tasty.
Did they like it?
Well, they told Miss McKim they did. It sure disappeared quickly.
Probably downed it in one bite.
Just about. Miss McKim told them it was American Indian food, but I think she lost them on that.
January 9, 1943. As we sat in the common room, waiting for Jerry to make cocoa, I noticed the love-starved couples all around us, hungry for each other and kept apart. The crowd broke up early, drifting off, away from provocations that will end in frustration because of nonsensical camp restrictions. The latest was announced this week. Single women can now eat on the parade ground with a man or boyfriend, but must not look romantic, as guards with binoculars are watching and know the romantic ones. And if the guards don't catch you, the petty and envious among us might call you a dirty commingler. Some people have way too much time that they could put to better use.
Women's Committee Minutes. It is our sincere hope that in the first 4 months of 1943, women will work harmoniously together, each doing their fair amount of the work, and no one undertaking so many duties that she develops a martyr complex.
Peg says that after the war, she'll never live communally again. People actually fight over bananas at first meal, and elbow to the front of the line to get the best ones. January 15, 1943. At 5 minutes to two, we were all gonged and yelled at to assemble for roll call. The men went right through, but it took us women and children 2 hours, with babies fussing and children tearing around, while soldiers checked off lists. All afternoon, wild rumors spread about the reason for the surprise roll call.
I think it boils down to 3 things, Millie. 1, they're getting ready to send some of us to Manila because of the firewood shortage. 2, they were looking for money and canned goods.
Well, you can't squeeze blood out of a turnip, can you?
Or Cy.
Cy? He escaped 4 months ago.
They finally caught the idiot.
Where?
I don't know. But they're gonna bring him here so they can torture or probably kill him in front of us as an example. That's what's going around camp.
January 22nd, 1943. 3 guards left today, as patched, ragged, and seedy as they came in. Quite a contrast with one of their replacements. We now have a new sergeant, who's a big, husky, handsome type. He speaks English and walks around wearing swanky American khaki shirts and trousers. Before they left, our old guards warned Arthur about him and the other new guards. As much as I hate the men's poker games, I concede to Jerry's point that they are one of the best ways to find out what's going on.
Aw, what'd they do, Arthur? Chase you out of the women's barracks?
Oh, just deal the cards, will you, Larry?
What's his name?
Sergeant Fukihara.
That new guard? Yeah, he's a cocky little bastard.
His English is good.
Natalie told me that he lived in the States.
You know, something doesn't make sense about that guy. All the soldiers come in looking road hard and put away wet. But old Sergeant Fukihara, he looks like he just came off a cruise ship.
Well, he sure likes the women. Calls himself a Class A military man. And get this. The first thing he asked about was if women are available at the guardhouse.
Sai said he's seen our new guards beating people at the jail.
Swell.
Boy, Sai sure got off easy.
You know what happened with that, Arthur?
Just bits and pieces. Seems General Nagasaki spared Sai's life because he likes Sai's son.
Who's General Nagasaki?
He's in charge of Baguio. When the executive committee found out Sai was being transferred back here, we sent a notification to High Command stating that the camp can't be held responsible if Sai tries to escape again.
They think we can police Sai?
I'm not concerned about Sai. I think he's learned his lesson. But Sergeant Fukihara has me a little worried. Something doesn't clock right with that guy.
Well, where are you going back to?
January 26, 1943. After 4 nights of chills and fever, I finally slept soundly last night, completely out of this world of discomfort and trouble. Everyone's grateful for the Mansell family who donated hundreds of sulfa tablets intended for mission use in Africa. It looks like we may need them soon for dysentery. No rain is affecting our drinking water and sewage, and we're seeing more flies around camp. Oh, just like this time last year. One of the nasty creatures bit right through my sweater. January 28, 1943. Jerry thought the doctor would put me on the special diet we give patients, but I guess I am not sick enough. I don't want to wait until I'm jaundiced, so Dorothy brought me a special diet plate this afternoon. Red hot graft, whisked out past authority. Oh, the food tasted good. But I'd still rather get along on regular chow to save friction and face. January 29, 1943. Jerry says we're out of our own food, so no egg for breakfast. Only camp chow, consisting of hot water rice. I felt lightheaded all day. January 30, 1943. I've noticed something off about Sergeant Fukihara's behavior. When Japanese officers visited camp yesterday, the sergeant strode up to join a colonel, and after a salute, walked up the road right next to a general. An equity most unusual for an acting sergeant. Is this a sample of the much-vaunted new fraternity between officers and soldiers in the Japanese army? Well, whatever's going on, Sergeant Fukihara sure has pushed Mr. Hayakawa, our timid civilian commandant, into the background. And, from what the men say, undercover as well.
It's true, I swear. Richie pulled the covers from Ray's bed this morning and found Hayakawa sound asleep.
What the hell was he doing in here?
Beats me.
Miss McKim says Hayakawa's afraid of Sergeant Fukihara.
Yeah, well, the story I heard was Fukihara had a girl and tossed Hayakawa out of his own room.
That sounds about right.
Man, this is one for the records, even in this loony bin. Hey, Hayakawa's not bunking in with us now.
Yeah, Larry. He's gonna sleep right next to you.
Did you know that Hayakawa went to school in Baguio with a couple of the guys in here?
Then he can take one of their beds.
January 31st, 1943. A miraculous bag of food arrived from Nida. I made Jerry come over just to see his face as he pulled out curry powder, chili powder, and Parmesan cheese from our shelves at home, and a precious package of white beans and a bundle of beefsteak. All the makings for a curry or chili dish. Jerry claims Nida must have read his mind. There's news of a big conference in Morocco, with Churchill, Roosevelt, and many leaders there. Japan is promising independence very soon to the Philippine Islands, and within a year to Burma. February 4, 1943. Bacillary dysentery reached the upper dorms last night and took Penny to the hospital. 4 men from the men's barracks have it. Camp is subdued and nervous. An open trench latrine is being dug this morning in the back of the convent buildings. If the nuns don't catch dysentery from the hastily built privy, well, the flies will do the rest. February 5th, 1943. 6 more dysentery cases. The youngest has a temperature of 105. Peg looked panicky as people from our barracks took their bedding to the hospital. Patients have been given serum, and Dr. Hall worked the microscope until 11 last night and is worn out.
I don't know why I even bother, Natalie. No one seems to worry about dysentery until it's too late.
Well, you know I agree with you, Dr. Hall. I'm warning children to keep their hands extra clean. So, do you think this is going to be a repeat of last year?
I hope not. We're certainly better prepared and have a hospital in camp, but I'm afraid it's back to quarantines, specimens, and a strict disinfection regimen.
But how do they expect us to disinfect the camp with the ashes we're using for soap?
Well, the executive committee is going to take Miss McKim with us to talk to Mr. Hayakawa about that.
Miss McKim is included in all important camp discussions because she is well regarded by everyone for her intelligence and tact. Her upbringing as a Tokyo bishop's daughter brings serenity, patience, and an enigmatic demeanor that allows her to settle problems quietly and diplomatically, with no one knowing just where or how she stands on an issue.
How bad is it, Dr. Hall?
It's very serious, Miss McKim. The dysentery cases are increasing faster than last year because of our compromised health.
And the toilet paper shortages haven't helped.
How can I help, doctors?
You know what's going on in camp more than anyone, Miss McKim. Who's really in charge? It isn't Hayakawa.
Sergeant Fukihara appears to have High Command's ear these days, Dr. Dean.
Then you have to help us make him understand the urgency here. You and Sergeant Fukihara weren't here this time last year.
I heard about it.
Well, the only reason there were no fatalities was because we ran a strict sanitation campaign.
Yeah, but this year supplies are even lower and those ashes we're using for soap ain't gonna cut it.
High Command says ashes are being used for soap back in Japan.
I can guarantee you that the Japanese Army hospitals aren't using ashes. No, we need disinfectants, specimen trays, and toilet paper, or this thing is gonna turn into an epidemic, if it hasn't already.
We also need immunizations for the healthy and medication for the sick. Otherwise, disease will continue to spread.
Exponentially.
And not just among internees. Japanese soldiers are just as vulnerable.
Good point. That ought to get Sergeant Fukihara's attention.
Now, here's a list we've put together.
The doctors, Miss McKim, and Sergeant Fukihara, with his white notebook, went down to the guardhouse at noon. Some Lysol was found, so our dorm is being disinfected from head to foot, side to side. Beds pushed down to one end to clean floors. Mattresses and blankets hung on lines and racks outside, and crying babies parked and dumped on irate fathers. Everyone works with a feeling of waiting and suspense, wondering who will get dysentery next. People swat flies, and we waitresses dip our hands in Lysol before serving. February 9, 1943. Four Japanese officers inspected camp. Arthur insists that they were intelligence, not medical officers, and no one can tell him any different. We're being treated like pests. No one is allowed to go to the guardhouse to hear the radio, as the guards don't want any contact with us during the epidemic. No bags or packages may be sent out of camp, but they are allowed to come in. To their credit, and Miss McKim's gentle persuasion, the Japanese Army Hospital quickly sent cellophane specimen containers, which all internees must use. Castor oil, magnesia, and serum arrived today. 27,000 died in Kappa's prison, and the Japanese army doesn't want this repeated, so a notice was placed on the parade ground bulletin board.
The Japanese authorities have ordered that all members of the camp be inoculated with triple vaccine, cholera, typhoid, dysentery, and vaccinated against smallpox.
February 11, 1943. June's specimen showed that she has dysentery. The poor kid. She's had a rotten time with her health and a poor diet for weeks. When I pulled her out of school, she wept. Jerry took his mattress pad and my double blanket to the hospital for her bed. The Grays have kindly loaned me a blanket and a pillow. February 12, 1943. Today's scandal is a mother let her child with the trots go unreported for 4 days. The Japanese have installed square boxes outside doorways with Lysol cloth on which we must wipe our feet before entering a room. Enid has been on her hands and knees scrubbing the toilets to help with the sanitation campaign. At 10 in the morning, she found 4 women playing bridge and really gave them what for.
Well, this is a fine how-do-you-do. It is incomprehensible to me how any of you has the gall to play bridge in the middle of an epidemic. Oh, don't look at me like that. 2 of you have children in the hospital, for heaven's sake. Has it occurred to any of you that we might need volunteers? Surely you can think of something better to do than sit around a bridge table and throw parties while the rest of us scrub floors.
February 14, 1943. I dreamed of being in a big tea garden in a large stone house on Beacon Street. There was gleaming silver, satins shining and taffetas rustling, subdued lights and restrained murmur of conversation. All very Boston. Everyone turned to stare at me with that frigid look which all good Bostonians can turn on at times. I suddenly realized that I was dressed in my concentration clothes and run-down shoes. I kept saying over and over, "I'm only trying to find my way out. I'm just trying to find the door." February 15, 1943. Drainage and cesspool problems have plagued us for days. The gutters are rivers of white from the lime used to kill baby flies growing by the thousands. It drifts all over the grass while we keep busy with the camp's new obsession, drafting house plans for when we get out of here. Before June fell sick, plans to enlarge our kitchen were spread all over our bed. In addition to a huge kitchen, we designed a beautiful bathroom, 2 bedrooms, and a small library. Peg just laughed at us. February 17, 1943. June is back home. She bounded out of the hospital, all aglow, saying she gained 2.5 pounds. June said patients had to use Dr. Hall's dysentery reports as toilet paper. That's all that's left. The camp's taken to using school paper, as well as pages from books that we read while waiting in line. February 18, 1943. People are finally listening to Dr. Hall. Daphne is back to making health posters, and the dining room is papered with the children's crayon signs reading, "Don't drink tap water, don't chew your toys, and send your specimen on time." Despite all this, the epidemic doesn't seem to have slowed the chit-chat in the women's barracks.
Ugh. I can still smell the chlorine. Can you?
No.
Well, y'all must be nose blind, Doris. Someone broke a whole bottle of chlorine in the dispensary, and it seeped into the dorm last night.
I saw them drive up before second meal.
Who?
The Pearsons' son, Jack, and his little boy. They'd all been hiding out near Etogon Mine. Jack's wife didn't make it.
What happened to her?
Well, she was a diabetic, you know. Jack said they had a 2-year supply of insulin, but had to hide in the bush for 10 days with nothing to eat but rice and milk.
Oh.
With her condition, she developed an intestinal blockage, and they had to turn themselves in.
She's always been so frail.
Mm-hmm. But instead of taking her to a hospital, the Japanese put her in a barrio jail, where the poor little thing died. Jack couldn't do anything but watch her suffer.
Those poor dears.
Well, someone's got to pray for the sorry group.
Maybe this is like a little vacation for them.
Vacation for who?
The new nuns at the convent. They're supposed to be cloistered.
What's that?
It means you just sit around praying and don't see or talk with anyone but nuns.
Good luck around here.
See, that's what I mean. Gee, I wonder what they must think of all of us.
February 28, 1943. Chef Alex has been in a foul mood lately. With so many dysentery cases, he has to make more special meals for the recovering patients. Plans for the garden expansion have ceased due to the lack of seeds and tools. And so much silverware has been pinched from the dining room that it's almost impossible to serve meals. Today, he gave 1.5 stuffed cabbage rolls to the men and shorted 35 women, many of whom had worked hard all afternoon preparing the vegetables for them.
I can't apologize no more for those women, Art.
Well, then just make some more cabbage rolls for them.
There is no more cabbage.
Well, I can't help you there.
And people still fighting over bananas.
What?
Oh, yeah. Everyone fights for first in line to get best bananas.
Then get your assistants to hand them out.
I'm not going to do that. They'll get killed.
March 9, 1943. After teasing us for days, there is finally rain. Blessed rain. And it's a hard one that's lasting all evening, filling the tanks and the spring, and enough to wash away some of the garbage dump and drown flies and their eggs. Everyone, including myself, is looking forward to having enough piping hot water for sponge baths. March 10, 1943. Today, the banana machine, a masterpiece invented by Phil at the shop, appeared before our astonished eyes at first meal. It's the picture, plan, and execution of the camp's state of mind.
You have outdone yourself, Phil. This is even better than your fly swatters.
How does it work?
Simple, Alex. The cooks load a banana into each of these slots on the assembly, and a server turns this crank so the next person in line has to take the next banana. What they get is the luck of the draw.
Phil, you're a goddamn Edison.
You're turning my dining room into a casino.
If you ask me, Phil has put more than hand skill into his invention. He has worked democracy into it. The machine does away with favoritism, privilege, graft, politics, and hurt feelings because the banana distribution is random and unseen. It cannot be exploited by people in the know or committee members to get votes. Well, at least until someone sits up nights and works out a plan to beat the game. We need more banana machines. They are great fun, with just that element of chance in the grooves to make dispensation exciting and mysterious. Will we draw a fat, long, yellow banana, fresh and unbruised? No, it's the green, hard one. Ah, but tomorrow, that may be our day.
This concludes episode 14. Be sure to tune in for the next episode of Forbidden Diary. the true World War II story of Natalie Crowther, based on her secret journal written from a Japanese prison camp in the Philippines.